Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. I'm delighted to welcome you all to this edition of All Sides Weekend. This is the book show. We talk about books. It's still summer, so it's sultry out there, but find a cool corner and cuddle up with a good book. And I have three people who will give you wonderful advice about what's great to read, beginning with Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Cassie's blog is thelongestchapter.com. It's important to anyone who loves to read. Michelle Herman is here. Michelle is Professor Emerita of Creative Writing at the Department of English at The Ohio State University. She is a writer. She is a teacher. She is a dancer. She is an advice columnist, and she is here. And Chris Hickey is here from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Library, where you are Youth Services Manager, which means you're busy because there's a lot of expansion in that area in the library now, right now. And Chris comes and brings us quick picks from the library, those books everybody wants to read. There's generally a line, and Chris will tell you how to get to the head of that line. Before we begin the discussion, I want to shout out to a book called Royal Roots, Reimagining a Life Through Humor, a Castle, and a U.S. Navy by an Ohio writer called Patricia Wynn Brown. I've had this book for a couple of months. I just got to it. I knew a little bit about it. I have met Patricia Wynn Brown. I know that she has a good profile here in the community. And I was taken by it immediately because it's well written, because she and I are contemporaries. Well, I think she's contemporary with all of us here. Maybe not you, Chris Hickey. But she writes about campus unrest, and she writes about Kent State, and she writes about going to OU in very, very turbulent times. She writes about a Catholic school upbringing. Here we go. And frankly, a parent who struggled with devastating mental illness. There were a lot of parallels, frankly, in my own life, which kind of made me want to read this book, and I'm glad I did, and I am delighted to recommend it. Royal Roots, Reimagining a Life Through Humor, a Castle, and the U.S. Navy. If you want to know about the castle, read the book, again by Patricia Wynn Brown. She just calls herself a former Catholic schoolgirl. Her favorite color is plaid. Well, all right then. That is a recommendation. Michelle Herman, you dance with Patricia Wynn Brown.
I do. We take ballet classes together.
Well, tell the people love your book. There you go. The next time you're dancing.
I will.
We're going to begin with some recommendations for good reads, and I want to start with Cassie Rose. What do you have for us to read?
I have a new book by the Canadian author Miriam Taves. It looks like her last name is pronounced Toews, T-O-E-W-S, but it's pronounced Taves. It's Mennonite. People may recognize her for Women Talking, which was very popular. And also a book she wrote called All My Puny Sorrows. Both of those books, which I loved very much. Well, this is nonfiction and a memoir that she has written called A Truce That Is Not Peace. And it opens up with this fictional construct where basically a literary entity has asked her to write an essay or a short story answering the question, why do I write? And they've sent this out to lots of authors, and there's going to be a conference, and they're all going to read out this essay or story. And she pushes back and say, is it why do I write or why write? And they say, it's why do I write? So then you proceed to read this chapter, and it has nothing to do with writing. And in fact, it's a non-linear composition of many different episodes in her life. And about in the middle of that, I thought, okay, this is strange. And so we get to the next chapter, and the director has written back and said, this is not what we want. And we want you to write, why do I write? So then she goes on and she proceeds to do the same exact same thing. So she's writing all of these anecdotes and episodes from her life. And you start to get it as you get halfway through the book. And one of the things about this memoir is that she writes about, you see tragedy, but you also see humor. And it's humor on the lines of, and I need to attribute Kirkus with this because I read it in their review, they likened it to Irma Bombeck. I think people, that would speaks immediately. And when I read that in Kirkus reviews, I thought, yes, that's perfect. So, for example, she writes about her mother wanting to go on vacation. She's 12 years old with her sister, father, and they go to Ecuador in the Amazon. And you don't get pages and pages of it. You just get about half a page. And she says, well, we were dive bombed by bats. We were threatened with death by machete. And we were held up at gunpoint. And at that point, then she says how her mother is, first of all, her sister is embarrassed by her father's behavior because he's bumbling. And finally, you know, the mother just says, darling, we're being held up now. Just give the fellow your wallet. And so it's that kind of humor that you get in it. But at the same time, something horrible is happening. Or another time in the book where she describes a Christmas Eve dinner, and they're all gathered around the mother's table and they're all adults. And this man walks in, you know, partway through the dinner, and he says, hey, I'm here. And he sits down at the table and they all think someone's invited him, part of the family. They can't remember who. And then he gets halfway through the meal and he says, I'm at the wrong house. And he gets up and he leaves.
But the food was good.
Yeah, probably. But the thing is, though, is that what really has motivated her writing, what has all been part of it, is the suicide of her sister. And actually, her father took his life when she was a young girl, and then 10 years later, her sister did. But she doesn't dwell on the tragedy of it. That's the thing about this, and this is very much Miriam Taves. She's able to say, you know, is the tragedy in life and also the absurdity of life and just pulling it all together. So she's not writing about the suicide. She's writing, pulling all of these episodes together, and where you see the family who is on a picnic at a deserted island on a lake in Manitoba, and they come back to get their boat and it's gone. And, you know, they're all just looking for the boat, and they're laughing and you're laughing with them. And then you find out later in the book what happens. So you've realize how you are going through life and seeing the absurdity, the humor, but also the tragedy, and how it all in a way becomes one. It's really a well done memoir, and the structure that she has and the way that she has structured it is really brilliant.
Is it a new book?
Yes, it is. It came out in August.
Go over, review the title once more and the author and spell her name because so people get it.
It's called A Truce That Is Not Peace, and it's by Miriam Taves, T-O-E-W-S.
That is a recommendation from our own Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic, and her blog, Important If You Love to Read, If You Love Books, thelongestchapter.com. Chris Hickey, you got a quick pick for us, and what is a quick pick?
So quick pick, these are the hot books that have long hold lists, and we have a special shelf in all of our buildings so that if you walk in, you might see the thing that's on your hold shelf, and you can check it out and jump the line. So I have a cookbook. So we have a cookbook that's a quick pick right now. This is Samin Nosrat's new book. She wrote Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. And this is called Good Things, Recipes and Rituals to Share with the People You Love. So she wrote this book while she was grappling with what it means to be famous, which is not easy. She's actually coming to Columbus on Friday, October 10th, and so you can see her at the Rife Center. So it is a ticketed event, so you would need to purchase tickets for that. So this cookbook is about how food and community intersect. So she says with every recipe, there's either a cooking lesson or something that's deeply personal to her. She's got a section in the book that she calls the Produce Matrix, and it's filled with infographics. So the idea is that there are so many vegetable and salad things that you can do with whatever you have on hand. And that's intimidating for most people. So what she's done is she's created a framework for that. And she wanted to focus on possibilities rather than specifics. So this is going to be a good like tutorial type of cookbook as well. So she thought about writing a separate book on that, but then decided to incorporate it within these recipes. So this is, it's very glossy. It's bright colors. There's pictures of her garden and her dog. So this, if you're thinking about holiday, even though it's still so warm out, this would make a wonderful gift book for somebody. And let me just tell you some of the recipes. So we have tangy tart cake with preserved lemon and Greek yogurt. Doesn't that sound great? Garbanzo bonanza chickpea salad with cucumber and dill, creamy oregano dressing, and then olive oil fried bread.
That's it.
Yes,
right,
this will, you could check it out and look at it, but then this is probably one you'll buy for somebody.
Somebody buy it for me for the holidays. Tell me the title again.
So it is called Good Food or Good Things by Samin Nosrat.
I'm not surprised the way you described that's a quick pick. There's a wait for that book at the
Columbus
Library.
Yes, there is. And always for her. I think there still might be a wait for salt, fat, acid, and heat.
Well, with the title like that, how could you not have a wait? That's
right.
Perfect. You know?
Yes.
All right. Michelle Herman is here, and she is, when she's not writing, she's reading or dancing or teaching or advising. What do you got for us?
Well, first, I want to thank my two colleagues because I have made use of their recommendations lately. Chris recommended, remind me of the name of it
again? The Spell Shop.
The Spell Shop, which I bought for my daughter when we went on vacation together. And it was, she said, how did you nail my taste exactly? Because she's interested in queer romanticy. That was amazing. And then two of Cassie Rose's recent recommendations. You mentioned several months ago, Flashlight, Susan Choi's new book, which I am about three quarters of the way through now, and I love it so much. This is a big, juicy family saga that's unlike anything you've ever read before.
Flashlight, one word?
Flashlight, one word, by Susan Choi, who herself is a fantastic writer. She's published two other novels, both of which are really wonderful. And then I finally got Helen Schulman's story collection
from
the library, from Whetstone. So it all comes together. And I loved it. And I'd never heard of her. So I'm always shocked when people mention a writer I've never heard of. But today, I thought I would bring us a little meditation on the art of the essay. Publishers are shy about publishing collections of essays because they fear that people won't buy them. And I know that sometimes people are a little afraid of them because you hear the word essay and you think about what you had to write in school. So I kind of want to make a plug for this. I mean, not only because my most recent book is a collection of essays.
Remind us of the title. Come on.
It is called If You Say So. And it's been on my mind anew because I've been coming to campus to the audio lab and I'm recording the audio version of it. Myself. In fact, all my books are going to be out on audio, one after another. And as I was here yesterday reading from it, I thought, I love essays so much, I need to write another one. And also because I'm in the middle of writing an essay for Slate that is a follow-up of my first dance essay that I published with them when I first began dancing. And they wanted to know, well, what happened 8 years later? And so I sent the first draft of the essay to my editor, and her response was, this is great. I want to hear more about your injuries and the specific way you deal with them. And I thought, that's what's so interesting about the essay. It's a short piece. It's only 2,000 words. And what you, the expectations you bring to it and what you get out of it are so incredible. So the first book is one of my favorite essay collections. It's called 100 Essays I Don't Have Time to Write. On umbrellas and sword fights, parades and dogs, fire alarms, children and theater. And it's by the brilliant playwright Sarah Rule, who's, I think, is one of the great contemporary playwrights. And she's been writing nonfiction lately. She published her last nonfiction book was called Smile, and it was about a very stubborn case of Bell's palsy that she had. My daughter got me this book back when she used to be in theater, and I was immediately captured by it. The essays are very short, I should say. They are literally 100 essays. Some of them are a paragraph long. Some of them are two or three pages long. The first essay in the book, which is called On Interruptions, ends with this. Tempting as it may be for a writer who is also a parent, one must not think of life as an intrusion. At the end of the day, writing has very little to do with writing and much to do with life. And life, by definition, is not an intrusion. So if that charms you, I guarantee you will be charmed by this entire book. She has a delightful mind. I'm going to read you the entirety of...
Well, hold that. Can we take a break and come back to you, okay?
Absolutely.
Don't go away. We're going to take a quick break. and come back with more of All Sides Weekend, and Michelle's going to read for us.
Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend. This is the book show. I'm Christopher Purdy. My guests are Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, Chris Hickey from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Library with Quick Picks, and author, writer, teacher, dancer, advice columnist, raconteuse, Michelle Herman. And I interrupted you for our break about her essay, so
I
go back.
I love being called a raconteuse.
Yes.
I wanted to read a one-paragraph long essay. This is essay number 36 in Sarah Rule's 100 Essays, I Don't Have Time to Write. This one is called Everyone is Famous in a Parade. I love watching my children watching parades. They seem to love the simple act of some people walking down a street while other people stand still and watch. I think it must be the most basic, simple form of theater. Very little storytelling and a distinction between the watcher and the watched. No one in the parade is a famous actor, but they are all famous in the moment because they happen to be moving and the other people happen to be standing still. And that is the entirety of that essay.
You know, I love books of essay, and one of my favorite is Vivian Gornick. I've read so many of her books of essays. And there's also, I think, Scott Russell Sanders, I think, is another one whose essays I love. Yeah. Because a lot of times that you can, it's, they're essays, but they're on one, like Vivian Gornick will be writing on one topic about being a woman in New York and being the daughter of a Jewish mother and their relationship. And, or Scott Russell Sanders, and it's been a while since I've read his, but, you know, about the Midwest and Iowa, Nebraska, wherever he was. And it just, it takes you into this world and thinking about that world that is theirs and down their thought path. And especially if they're writing essays that are in a way somewhat connected, you get even more into the book because of it. But it's the way that they help you think on your own life too. So there's this, that's what I love about them, because I think about their lives and then it, I put it down, and there may be a way that I think about something that happened in my life that would be essay-like. I wouldn't be writing about it, but...
Have you ever been tempted to write essays yourself?
I have, yes, I think, you know, decades ago, and I think I did, but I just sort of filed them away.
Yeah, I did the same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you take Sarah Rule's book as a guide, think about writing a tiny, tiny.
Yeah.
I mean, and there are. There's,
that might be harder, though, don't you think, to write a tiny
yes,
one?
Yes, because I have tried. Even, I mean, until I was writing for Slate, I had never written anything that was under 5,000 words. And Slate gives me strict word limits. But I've been trying for years to write the perfect modern love essay for the New York Times, because that essay every Sunday...
Yeah.
It's the reason I'm still reading the New York Times, I think, is to read Modern Love and the ethicist and the other advice, the social cues, the advice
Philip Galanis, yeah.
Yes, I love him.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to do what you have to do in so few words. But then it's so satisfying, because now I do it. I mean, essentially the advice column is several little essays every week on whatever subject has come up from the readers. Today is my advertisement for essays. And I, if you've never read an essay, and I was such a person, like in, I don't know, 2000 or so, I was just not a reader of personal essays. The introduction to it, which was suggested to me by somebody who wrote essays professionally, is a big fat anthology called The Art of the Essay that Philip Lopate, who is one of the great contemporary essayists, put together. And the essays are arranged in chronological order, starting with Montaigne. And so, and you can dip in and out. But I discovered so many writers through reading these short pieces by them. Natalia Ginzburg, for example, an Italian writer whom I had known nothing about. The essay of hers in this book is so perfect that it led me down not only the road of reading all of her essays, but reading her novels, reading her memoirs. And then, as happens when you discover a writer so late, finding out that she was long dead and being brokenhearted.
So that's my
ad and recommendation.
Can't call her up on your phone, which is always a temptation.
Not for me.
Okay. Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Library. Give us another quick pick.
So we have Dan Brown's newest book, and this is great fun. So this is called The Secret of Secrets, and it is the sixth Robert Langdon novel. So Robert Langdon from The Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons. He's the Harvard symbologist. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
That sounds good.
He's
the hero of the book. He understands how symbols are, and he uses his knowledge to, you know, solve these complex happenings in the world. And his books are always they're thrillers, but they take you through art and architecture and places. And I read them slowly because I will stop and look up pictures of places and look up the pictures of the art. And it's always a wonderful experience. So he's calling this one his most ambitious and the most fun to write.
How long has it been since his last book?
You know, honestly, I'm not sure.
It's been a while since
it's been maybe 8 years.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
So this story centers around the question, what happens after we die? And so 8 years ago, he thought, well, nothing happens after you die. But he since then has had these conversations with physicists and philosophers and scientists, and now he no longer believes that. So one of the main characters of this book is Catherine Solomon. And if you're a fan of his, you'll remember her from The Lost Symbol. She is a noetic scientist, which means she studies consciousness. And they are now romantically involved. So at the beginning of this book, we are experiencing what could be an out-of-body experience of an unknown character. And then when we catch up with Robert, he is in Prague with Catherine. She is giving a lecture series. And she has this theory that we don't know about yet, but it's on human consciousness, and it threatens everything that anyone in science or anyone knows. And so she goes missing, and her manuscript goes missing. So of course he's going to use all the things he knows to help find her. But at the beginning, when he attends this lecture with her, she kind of calls him out and has him explain some things. And he asks the question of everyone in the room, like, what is the most common image or symbol that you see in all religious imagery? And so people said the cross, and he says no. And I'm not going to tell you what he says because you've got to read it, but it's fascinating.
What does happen after we die? Can you tell us that?
No, we don't know, but Kirkus is raving about this and saying this is probably the best of the series. And
so far,
I'm excited and enjoying it. There's another character in this book that you may know about, and it comes out of Jewish folklore, and it's called the Golem of Prague. And so that is also part of the story, and I'm not sure how this ties together, but it is so fun. And
it sounds like he's done his research.
He has, and he's thought a lot of deep thoughts about this and pouring this. So everything in it is based on something real, even though this is a novel.
The Secret of Secrets
by
Dan Brown, the latest from Dan Brown.
You know what's funny? When I was thinking about sort of a theme for today's books, I had this stray thought that I should talk about books that tell you fiction, that tells you what happens after death.
Yes.
Chris and I are in some kind of an ESP relationship.
I think we are.
But I couldn't think of one that I really loved other than Elsewhere by Gabrielle Zevin.
Oh, that book is absolutely
wonderful. It's a YA novel. And I only read it because I had read Gabrielle Zevin's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which I don't recall if you've talked about on the show ever, but is a fantastic contemporary novel. And I loved it so much, I went and got all her other books out of the library, none of which I enjoyed, except for Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. What's the author's name again?
Gabrielle Zevin, Z-E-V-I-N. Okay. Elsewhere is a very slim novel. It's aimed at teenagers, and its protagonist is a teenager. but it presents a vision of what happens after we die that is the most beautiful one I have ever encountered. And I have since given this book as a gift because it's very comforting.
There'll be a people. Line now for and that book in this day and age.
The cover is beautiful. Doesn't it have a snow globe or something like that on the cover?
It does. We're on the subject of after death. And I am not a person with a belief system that has anything happening after death. And this just filled me with joy.
Thank you for that. That's
anytime.
Elsewhere by Zevin, Gabrielle Zevin.
Gabrielle Zevin.
She's written many wonderful books.
Okay, what do we do after we die, Cassie Rhodes? So top that. Let's go.
Well,
take us someplace fun.
Well, it's sort of fun. It's good. Mercy by Joan Silber. Joan Silber is a beloved author, and I liken her to Alice McDermott. She has that where she writes about ordinary people and really ordinary events, but in a way that is just compelling in how we can relate to it and what happens to them. And anyway, this book called Mercy has her signature style of connected stories, although they're loosely connected. But the very first one is narrated by a man who is 57. He's in Brooklyn, and his daughter asks him, "Have you ever done anything that you're ashamed of in your life?" I think that's the question. And he says, "Oh, well,
did I want to tell my daughter?"
Yeah, right. Well, what was it? I can't remember what the questions, but it's like, did you ever do anything that you shouldn't have done or something like that? And he jokes about it and he says, "Well, yes, I lied to your mother. I told her I loved her kale salad." But the reality is he's thinking, "Yeah, I have done something, but nobody knows it. And I'm never going to tell anyone that." And he goes back into time where the 1970s East Village, with his friend Eddie, and Eddie's a bartender, Ivan drives a cab, but they're also druggies. They're into heroin, but they're functioning. And they go to Amsterdam, they go to London, Eddie has a way to go into the parks, find out where the dealers are, they come back to New York, they're in an apartment, and Eddie's girlfriend comes over, Ginger, and then something happens. And Ivan has to get Eddie to the emergency room at St. Vincent's.
Something really happens.
And it's not a spoiler for me to tell you this because it's just not, and it's all over the dust jacket in the description, but he gets to the emergency room with Eddie, and Eddie's pretty much out of it. And Ivan thinks, if I stay, they're going to find out about the drugs and I could be arrested. Yeah. So he abandons his friend. And so you get to the end of this and you sense he doesn't know whatever happened to Eddie. So the next story is about the girlfriend that is Eddie's girlfriend that was at the apartment. And she becomes very famous on TV and in movies. And then there's a story about a young girl named Kara, who was 10 years old and in the emergency room at the time and saw everything. And so Joan Silber takes you through all of this, and it's just sort of hanging out there of what happened to Eddie. You know, Ivan thinks he died. And so but she doesn't push it at you. So you're reading about these lives that are just going on, and then you find out in the end. And it's so Joan Silber, so well done in, again, like Alice McDermott, you're comfortable with the characters. You can relate to them. And also it's 1970s, 1980s. You know, there's a lot of, sex, love, drugs going on.
For the first time ever in the history of the world.
I was trying to figure out what was going to follow is the 70s and the 80s. Like, I was thinking, what did the 70s and 80s have that the rest of them have? Shoulder pads?
Right. So, but if you are new to Joan Silber, if you've never read her before, I actually would not start with this. I would read Ideas of Heaven, or I would also read Fools. Both of those are two of her books I absolutely loved. And but Mercy is great, and it is getting rave reviews. I loved it, and it's just very good. It's Joan Silber.
Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is The Book Show, All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. One more time, a shout-out to Patricia Wynn Brown and her new memoir, Royal Roots, Reimagining a Life Through Humor, a Castle, and the U.S. Navy. It's filled with humor, it's filled with pathos, it's filled with drama, and it's a very good read. Michelle Herman, what do you got for us?
Okay, so I want to tell you about another great favorite collection of essays. Do you all know Ex Libris by, of course, Cassie knows it. Ex Libris by Anne Fadiman is, its subtitle is Confessions of a Common Reader, and it's a book that I just know will appeal to anyone who listens to this show regularly because it's a book about the joy of reading. And the essays are short, not as short as the ones in Sarah Rule's books, but they have titles like Marrying Libraries, which is an essay about what happens when you move in with someone who has as many books as you do and how you make the decision of how to combine those books.
That's a great essay, too.
They're all great essays. There's one called Insert a Carrot, which is about, I love reading out loud. This is the beginning of Insert a Carrot. During a recent visit to the Florida island where our parents live, my brother and I had dinner with them at a fancy restaurant. As we bent our heads over our menus, all of us, that is, except my father, who can't see, I realized that our identically wrapped expressions had nothing to do with deciding what we wanted to eat. "They've transposed the E and I in Madeira sauce," commented my brother. "They've made Bel Paz into one word," I said, "and it's lowercase." "At least they spell better than the place where we had dinner last Tuesday," said my mother. "They serve P-E-A-K-I-N-G, duck." But my favorite essay in the book, one that I have reread probably 100 times and that I have given to my students, is called Never Do That to a Book. And this is an essay about the two kinds of book lovers, courtly lovers and carnal lovers. And I am here to ask the three of you at this table with me, what kind of book lover are you? The courtly lover appreciates the book as an object. They appreciate what's in the book, of course, but they also see the book as a precious object and would never dog-ear pages or write things in the book or, God forbid, use the flyleaf on the back to take notes, leave the book spread open like this, which is actually how the essay opens with, in childhood, Anne Fadiman's brother leaving a book that way and the chambermaid at the hotel closing it and leaving a note that says, "Never do this to a book." So that's one type. The other type, the carnal lover, appreciates the book only for what's in it and doesn't care at all. Me too, Chris. Chris is raising his hand. Doesn't care at all about the object. I dog-ear my books. I write in my books. I take my books into the bath with me.
Many of mine are in shreds and I still read
shreds,
them.
Anne Fadiman, her father, Clifton Fadiman, was a very famous critic. And what he would do when he traveled to make his load lighter, and I have taken a leaf out of his book and now I do it too, is he'd bring a big fat paperback, and as soon as he finished reading part of it, he would tear that part out and throw it away. So the book would get smaller and smaller. I have passed this trait on to my child, who she's 32 now, but when she was a child, she would read her Harry Potter books in the shower, not in the bath, but in the shower, because I would tell her to go upstairs and take a shower, and she would do it. She would turn the water on, but she would stand in the shower with the book on the other side of the spray and read it, just stand there. She figured that was getting clean enough, and so all the books on her shelves are all
warped and
completely warped.
Yeah.
So what but kind of reader? I'm going to guess that Cassie is a courtly book lover. Am I right?
Actually, I'm both.
Ooh.
And I am both because I'm a book collector. So I, and you know, first editions and, you know, fine copies, signed, don't want it price clipped. And because of that, and I became a collector probably midway through my life as a book critic, I stopped underlining in books and started marking with little sticky pieces of paper and taking notes. So I'm I'm very much in the camp of both. I don't want to, because...
But do you still abuse books that are not part of your collection of books? Like if I gave you a gift, if I handed you this book and said, here, here's a gift, would you maul this one? Or now you're in the habit of courtly love of books?
Well, I wouldn't, because you never know. So for example, the books that I, The World According to Garp, John Irving, that I read back, in the 1980s?
In the 70s, yeah.
And because of keeping it and I didn't maul it, it's probably worth some money as a first edition.
That's right. You could hawk that book right now. Hold that thought. We got to take one more break. Don't go away.
Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books with Cassie Rose, Chris Hickey, and Michelle Herman. And Michelle was challenging us. We're going to take just one more minute. Who's a carnal book lover and a what?
Courtly.
A courtly lover. Book lover. The carnal ones tear it up, right?
Yeah.
Here's a problem I have. I wonder if you dust. I have books everywhere on the floor. Yes. I have books everywhere except in bookcases. They're just all and the dust, after a couple of years, they say it doesn't get any worse. The dirt doesn't get any worse. Yeah. But I'm always blowing the books before I pick them off the floor. So I guess I'm a carnal one. How about you, Chris?
I am a combination, but I definitely lean more courtly. And that is because, like Cassie, I collect. So I collect signed copies because I go to lots of author events. And they are very precious and they must stay where they are. And I have some that, like, I have a Gloria Steinem. I have a Judy Blume. So it's a really great collection and I don't want anyone to mess with it.
I would make you so crazy in 5 minutes. You'd want to kill me.
Yeah.
Do you have a quick pick for us?
I do. And I have a spicy romance. Are we ready for one of those? Okay. So this is Elsie Silver. She is a Canadian author, and she is known as the small town romance queen. And this is the final book in a four-book series. It's called the Rose Hill series. This book is called Wild Card. Now, her series, you don't have to read all the books. So they take place in the same place, and the other characters of previous books will come in and out. But if you haven't read them, it's a fine standalone. I haven't read the other ones, and I enjoyed this very much. So it's spicy. It goes. This is a five. This is a 5 out of 5 chili pepper.
Oh, really?
I've talked about Tessa Bailey before and how she is way up in the stratosphere. So is Elsie Silver.
Is there a difference between spicy and erotic?
I think it's the same thing.
Okay.
I would say the same thing.
In my day, we called them dirty books.
Spicy is contemporary language.
It's the word of the moment.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So this is...
I mean, are they in a locked cabinet in the library like they were back in the day?
Well, there's that forced proximity, which is a trope. Right?
Oh, that's right.
That forced proximity. Yeah. And there's a little bit of that in here. So our main characters are Sebastian, otherwise known as Bash. And Gwen, she's a yoga teacher. He's an aerial firefighter. Oh. So it's
the careers, the careers.
Here we go.
Romance.
Oh, it's so great. They have a meet cute at an airport during a snowstorm and are not able to reconnect after this very sweet night of getting to know each other. And we're not spicy yet. That's very chaste. When they do reconnect, she's dating his son, Trip.
Okay. Trip. P's, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Two P's. Oh, yes,
turns
two P's.
In book form.
It really is. So,
does she know it's his son?
No.
Okay.
No. And so Bash fathered a child when he was a teenager, and he never knew about this child.
Oh, okay.
So he is just recently so he's trying to build a relationship with Trip. He shows up at the birthday party and there's Gwen. So that does not go well. But Gwen then moves to Rose Hill. And she's post-breakup with Trip, although Bash does not know this. There's another wonderful character. His name is Clyde. And he is an older man. He is friends with Bash. And he's like this cantankerous, survivalist, conspiracy theorist with a heart of gold. He's just delightful. And he knows that Bash is crazy about Gwen. And so he finds these ways to get them together. So there's a forced proximity situation that comes about. He starts taking yoga lessons. Clyde starts taking the yoga lessons and to bring them together. It's a beautiful love story, though. What I like about Elsie and some of these other writers is she writes good people. They're good people. The relationships are healthy. And so there ends up being a beautiful love story with a lot of spiciness in it. There's also a message of body positivity in this book. Gwen is very curvy. She was body shamed by her father. So there's healing that comes from that. But it is just it is a sweet romance. I mean, it's delightful. It's a feel good story. Like romances, you know, everything's going to be OK. Mm-hmm. So
I won't ask you to give away the ending, but what happens to Trip?
What happens? Well, he's kind of a.
Is he not the sharpest knife in the drawer?
And he's a hockey player. He was raised by his mother, who's not great. So he's kind of,
All right, so we have to worry about Trip a little bit.
You got to worry about Trip, right, but he's Trip got, like, bit. Trip's going to be fine.
Okay.
He's a little bruised, but he'll be okay.
He'll find a nice girl and it'll be
He'll find someone and he's, you know, it's all going to be all right.
Okay, so we have an erotic book. We have a spicy book. Michelle Herman, top that. What do you got for us?
Oh, my God. I have to type top spicy. Do you know I'm the kind of reader who just skips past the sex scenes?
Really?
You
always done that or said just now?
Well, when I was a child, I didn't, because that's how I learned about sex, was from, you know, who was that? Sidney Sheldon. And Jacqueline Suzanne. My parents had those books, and that was my entire sex education.
Cassie and I are going to get T-shirts about Jacqueline Suzanne. We sort of obsess about her.
Oh, yeah. So
half the world doesn't know who she is anymore.
I know, which is very sad. But that was my education. I mean, I still have vivid images in my mind. Actually, I don't remember what year The Godfather came out, the novel, but I remember reading it. So I was still living with my parents.
Page 42.
And I don't know what page it was.
The wedding reception.
Oh, yes, 42. That is the one. So that's
okay,
how I learned about
sex. I'm the horse in the bed. I mean, that's what always I remember about
sex.
But
to me,
it's only the
sex, the size matter. But then as I grew up, I became a fan of the Chekhovian, or let's say the Madame Bovary method of the curtain being drawn right before sex. And that's the way I write sex scenes, unless they're comic sex scenes. I'm just not, I don't know. I hate to say this, but it's like hearing the description of someone going to the bathroom. Why do you want it? It's private. I have no interest in sex scenes. So I can't top, and I don't like it in movies either. I feel like, why am I seeing this? This is a waste of good time that could be spent on character development. So I can't top that, but I think I'm going to bring down the mood instead. Because talking about Anne Liebers's essay collection made me think about her first book, which is a big, fat book called The Spirit Catches You and Then You Fall Down. Very different kind of book. And it's not personal nonfiction. It's not about her life, although, as I've always told my students, the difference between creative nonfiction and general nonfiction is the presence of the author. So you very much feel her vision, her personality, her heart. But it's a big, fat book about the Hmong community in California and the conflict between this enormous community and the medical establishment. And on the face of it, it doesn't sound like the sort of book I would have been interested in. I read it because it was the freshman common book at Ohio State the year before I took over that program. I took over that program for years, and now it doesn't even exist anymore. But I read it when I was preparing to take over the program, and I two things happened. One was I thought, I will never choose a book like this, because it was way too daunting for an 18-year-old the summer before college. And the book was gigantic, and it was very complex. So I pivoted in a very different direction. But the second thing I took from it was, this is an incredibly great book, and I just loved it. I devoured every page of it, because her characterizations, you know, she's talking about a cultural phenomenon and a cultural misunderstanding, but every single human being depicted in it is depicted with the depth and roundness of a great novel. So I highly recommend that one.
That's Anne Fadiman as well?
Anne Fadiman as well, and it is the opposite of a spicy novel.
The spirit catches you and then you fall down. You have to love the title anyway.
Right?
I mean,
yeah.
For goodness sake, that's a recommendation from Michelle Herman on All Sides Weekend Books. We're getting down to the last 5 minutes or so, so I'm going to ask Chris Hickey and Cassie Rose right now to give us another, with some precises, but get us reading.
Okay.
That's what you do best.
A book called Difficult Light by Tomas Gonzalez, published by Archipelago Books, which I love their books because they're square and, anyway, love their books. I would not trash it or turn the page, you know. Anyway, it's narrated by a man who is in old age at this point and living outside of Bogota, Colombia, and he's looking back to a time through his life. But you don't know that yet when the book opens. Instead, it opens when he is lying in bed with his wife, Sarah. And it's just literally a 2-page chapter. And at the end of it, what he's saying is they're not sleeping. Well, they're not sleeping because this is the night when their son, Jacobo, has scheduled his death. And so you then go on to read the next chapter, and you're reading about the narrator, David, his life, about how he and Sarah left Bogota and they went to Miami. David is an artist, and he was in Miami. He's painting the light of the water and of boats. And then they move to New York, and he becomes a not as much of a famous, but he is a well-known artist, and he is has journalists calling him. So this is his career. So we see this through an artist's viewpoint, you could say. Then he comes back to the night of what is going on, about how he tells the story of that his 18-year-old son, Jacobo, was in an accident in a taxi in New York City, and he became a paraplegic, and the pain is too difficult for him. So without going into detail, he has found a way to end his own death in Portland, Oregon, and his brother, Pablo, goes with him, and Pablo has been very much taking care of Jacobo. And also we get how they built their life in New York too, and up to the accident, and then what happened with the accident. And then you have these days of during when they're knowing what is going to happen. So it's a story about family. It's a story about grief. It's a story about art and light and beautiful light, and also difficult life, which is the title of the book. And it's just, it's captivating.
It's a recommendation of our own Cassie Rose. The author, one more time.
The author is Tomas Gonzalez, and it's Difficult Light.
Difficult Light. And Chris Hickey, we have time for one more quick pick.
All right, so Buckeye. This is a novel from Patrick
Ryan. No kidding.
Ryan.
What does that mean? Oh, Buckeye.
Buckeye. Yeah. Buckeye. So it's a Read with Jenna book. He's best friends with Ann Patchett. So this book is getting a lot of hype. He is not an Ohio author like you think he might be, but he did get his Master of Fine Arts from Bowling Green State University. So this book takes place in a fictional Ohio town, and it is about two families post-World War II when an affair happens and what happens to these two families. So it takes place over 30 years, and it's a sweeping family small-town drama.
Buckeye by Patrick Ryan. That's a Jenna's
yes.
book club pick.
So it is a Jenna book club pick.
And that is a quick pick from the Columbus Library, and you're going to tell us one more time what a quick pick is.
Quick pick, these are the hottest books with long hold lists. You come into the building, you'll see it on the display, you check it out, and jump the line.
And they are put out every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday.
And they're the same in every branch, is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
How long does a book stay on the quick pick list?
It really depends on how popular it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's, so it's... Yeah.
Like, is there a record?
Maybe Spare.
No kidding. I wondered about that.
I'm guessing that Onyx Storm has been on for a long
time. Now there are stacks of it sitting around in the library.
Yes,
now.
We're waiting for something crazy will happen with the royal family, and then it'll be popular again.
When they get a divorce, it'll be another spare or whatever.
Don't say that. Never mind.
Something will happen.
Never mind.
Somewhere.
On that note, this is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy still. And my thanks to Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. My thanks to Michelle Herman, who keep dancing, as I know you do. And Chris Hickey from the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library. If you're in the Whetstone Branch and you're looking for something to read, go find Chris Hickey. Really find anybody there, but go find Chris Hickey. They always have wonderful recommendations. My thanks to Chris Johnson, who made it radio for us. My thanks to all of you listening. Keep reading. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy.